Davis Van Opdorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford, back from vacation. And just like my email inbox, we have a lot to get through in this Bundesliga match day. Dortmund and Augsburg played arguably the best game of the season, an exciting 4-3 result. And there is a new coach at VfB Stuttgart. But first, let's start the week in Munich. So Bayern Munich came up winless in their fourth game in a row in all competitions. It's their second straight Bundesliga loss. They lost to Borussia Mönchengladbach 3-0, and it is in full-on crisis mode in Munich as we get into this international break. Before we break down what is going on in Munich right now, we kind of have to give Gladbach some props, because I think that tactically they took the perfect approach to this game, did they not?
Definitely, and wrote a short piece today pointing out the addition of Alassane Player is certainly, I think, the missing piece of the jigsaw there. And Gladbach said so many times last season that they have such great playmakers, but it was so frustrating to watch them at times. Likes of Hazard and Raphael and Stindl combined together, but lacking that out-and-out striker who will provide that finishing touch. And yeah, is it 5 goals he's got so far, Player? Money well spent. Really, really good finish for the first goal as well.
Yeah, it was exactly the same, just slightly lower the finish than to the one he scored against Wolfsburg. In that position, it's been a while since Gladbach have had a player that would just shoot from there, you know, as you say. And I think that's certainly one thing that made a difference to Gladbach's game, but also their efficiency. I mean, you know, they pressured Bayern. They were in their face. We've said so many times we'd like to see a side do that in Munich. Not many teams do. And, you know, look at the way the second goal happens. Neuer plays a short ball out to Thiago. He miscontrols it. And instantly, Hoffmann is there, passes to Stindl. He takes one touch to completely bamboozle Hummels, and then it's a goal. You know, that's the kind of play that we're used to seeing from Bayern to the opposition in Munich. And to see a team visit Munich as the away side and do that was very surprising, but also very refreshing. You know, I mean, this is a Dieter Hecking team. It's not a Lucien Favre team, so I might not have been expecting it, but props to them for the way they played. You know, Florian Neuhaus in midfield. This is a guy who played really well last year in the second division. Now come in.
Helped Fortuna Düsseldorf get promoted.
Absolutely. And now he's slotted in and played a very comfortable game against Bayern Munich. I mean, yeah, there are issues at Bayern, but
I think they definitely took heart from the way that Ajax went at them.
Yeah, I think that was
during the week. Yeah, it was, and that's not to take anything away from Gladbach to say, oh, this was them just capitalising on a weak Bayern side. But it was really encouraging to see them, even on the counter attack, piling forward with 3, 4, 5 players. It's been quite a few years since we've seen teams daring to do that, because the danger has always been that they then get caught themselves. But the confidence was clearly there, and whether that came from a renewed confidence in their own abilities going forward, or from the knowledge that Bayern are struggling, I'm not sure. Probably a bit of both, but certainly encouraging to see.
Given Bayern's form coming into this game, how shocking was this result?
I still think it's pretty shocking. I mean, it's Bayern Munich. You know, we're not used to seeing them lose 3-0 in any situation, let alone at home in the Bundesliga, a league that they have strolled comfortably to win over the last 6 years. I'm shocked because for the first 10 minutes, in the same way that they took to the Ajax game, there was intensity, there was something about Bayern, and I think everybody thought that now they were going to deliver. And then nothing happened. They just completely deflated like a balloon. And I think that was what really surprised me. It was not what I was used to seeing from a Bayern Munich side. Their attention was off, their concentration was short, their passing wasn't very good. They did a lot of hopeful, patient play, but with no penetration whatsoever. It just didn't look like Bayern Munich as we know them.
I asked that question because when I got a chance to also rewatch the Ajax game, and you saw in the Ajax game that after they scored their goal early, they kind of they kind of shut down in a way. You kind of saw that. I just wanted to say, you kind of saw that in the Gladbach game. They were high intensity for maybe the first 5 minutes, but once they got on the ball, they kind of settled into this. Wait, give me the ball when you need me to have the ball, and I'm just going to stand here and wait when I don't have it. That's kind of the mode that's why I don't know if this result was as shocking for me as it may have been for. I mean, it was still shocking because it's still, like you said, John, it's still Bayern Munich losing 3-0 at home in the Bundesliga. But based on the way that they have lost these games.
I mean, the context of their form, yeah, sure, it's not that shocking. But I think in the league, that kind of performance, everybody was expecting them to come back. Hertha, you can say those kind of games happen. Robin scores at that chance, it's completely different. Augsburg even, you know, Bayern had loads of chances in that game. And maybe if Sandro Wagner's a bit hotter, then he scores, it's not a problem. It was only really from the Ajax game where they got beaten, really. They outplayed, they should have lost that. That I think people were like, oh, this maybe could be a problem. And then you get exposed dramatically against Gladbach. And now, we're, as you say, we're in crisis mode and there are problems, obvious problems.
I think there's a worrying limitation emerging in the way Bayern are going forward in their offensive play. And yeah, you pointed out, Davis, that they started well and they seem to have that intensity which lasts for maybe 15, 20 minutes. But that seems to be the limit of it. We pointed out the last time we spoke about the reliance on crosses during the Hertha Berlin game, which absolutely nothing came of. And this weekend against against Gladbach, I think Lewandowski only touched the ball 16 times, which, yeah, to me suggests some quite clear limitations going forward. And I think it's at that point that we have to start pointing the finger at Kovac and say, and asking the question, are you able to construct a team with a coherent offensive plan, or are you simply overly reliant on the likes of Ribben, Robbery and
Ribben? I like that better than Robbery.
What have I said?
Yeah, Ribben. I like that much better than Robbery. Maybe they're Ribben right now because yeah, they're not playing very well. But let's get on to Kovac, because this is obviously his first season at Bayern Munich. He doesn't have experience managing a team of this magnitude. Even when he managed Croatia, he did have a lot of world-class players, but one wouldn't compare the Croatian national team to Bayern Munich for many reasons. A lot of the media coverage in Germany has been basically circling around how much blame actually belongs to Niko Kovac.
I mean, you got to put some blame on the coach. As Matt said, you got to ask those questions. How can a side with the talent that Bayern have be so limited against Gladbach? And with all due respect to Gladbach, you know, they are a side that have their own vulnerabilities, but we didn't see any of them. So I think on the one hand, you can definitely say, okay, this is a sign that maybe Bayern are getting a little bit old. We're going into the 700th season where Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery are still being relied upon. That is a problem. On the other hand, you can say, well, Kingsley Coman is injured. Serge Gnabry isn't getting all the game time. You know, there are both sides to the argument. So I think you can definitely say that some of the blame rests with Kovac, but it's not an easy situation. I think ever since Guardiola has been there, and we've talked about this before, there has been a bit of a slump. He got them playing some of the most high-intensity football that this country has ever seen. He made changes tactically at Bayern that impacted the way that all coaches in this country approached the game. And that affected the way that Bayern Munich played. It affected the way that German football was played. The solution after that was to try and bring it back to being more Bavarian, to get back to this Mia San Mia feeling, but retain some of the intensity. That didn't really work.
With Carlo Ancelotti.
As we saw. And then you bring in Jupp Heynckes to steady a ship because you realize you've made a mistake, and Jupp Heynckes shows you that he knows exactly what to do and what to say. And then you reload, and obviously you get the third or fourth choice guy, because let's make no mistake
about
it. Yeah,
Matt, you mentioned that today. That was something that we really cannot forget, that he was not the first choice. That Niko Kovac was not Bayern Munich's first choice to take over.
And we said at the time when he was appointed that he was clearly lower down the pecking order than Thomas Tuchel and even Julian Nagelsmann. That's not to say that this is now 100% on Niko Kovac's fault and that he's now suddenly totally underqualified for the job and needs to go. That's not to say that at all. But there is, I think, the direct comparison does have to go back to Guardiola because of the comparative lack of progress and lack of tactical progress and like almost philosophical progress made under Ancelotti and Heynckes. So that as John was saying, Guardiola came in with the most exaggerated footballing philosophy going and did so much good for Bayern Munich. Kovac now seems to be suggesting the opposite, that he actually doesn't have an attacking philosophy or an offensive idea of how to go forward. He said after the game that we're not doing the business down the flanks and we're not doing it through the middle either. But these are flanks where he's relying upon Robin and Ribéry, and a central area where he's not playing Hammers, arguably one of the most creative players in the squad. So I do question if he really knows where to go forward, and that, like I said, contrasts hugely with the last manager to bring in any sort of philosophy really to Bayern, and that goes back to Guardiola.
And the thing about playing width with Bayern is don't cross the ball that much. I don't understand it. Yes, Lewandowski is good in the air.
But there's only one of him.
But there's only one of him. Yeah. And also, it's a really predictable tactic to play against Bundesliga sides who might be limited in many areas of defensive play, but not in the air. Yeah. I mean,
That's not Lewandowski's strength either.
No, and if you look at the way that Bayern, there's no doubt that Bayern have been over-reliant on Lewandowski for goals. If you look at the previous season, he's scoring 30-odd every season, right? And that's part of the problem, because he's not scoring now, and then Bayern don't score. That's one of their other issues. They don't really get goals from anywhere else. So if you stop the leak there, you stop them everywhere. But don't play in a way that isolates him. I mean, yeah, Robin is going to cut in and do what he does out wide. That's fine. Ribéry's going to have the overlap from Alaba. That's fine. You've got all of those options. But as Matt says, you've got Hammers in the middle. He's one of the most creative players in football, let alone in the squad, right? Use him. Bring Thiago up further to interplay with him, and bring Lewandowski the ball to his feet. He can do a lot more damage there. Yeah, cross it now and again. I'm not saying don't cross, but it looks like Kovac has made them really one-dimensional. Against Hertha, for the last 20, 30 minutes of that game, so much of it was just get it wide, put a ball in the mixer. So this isn't, you know, no disrespect, but this is Bayern Munich. You have a lot more technical players in your squad to do much more than say, okay, guys, we've got slightly less qualified players, so let's play a simpler game plan. I don't understand if that's the approach from Kovac. Why are you playing a simpler game plan? You're going to get found out. You get found out by Hertha Berlin. You get found out by Borussia Mönchengladbach. You know, Bundesliga sides have definitely gotten better in recent years from, like, say, 5 or 6 years ago, when Bayern could do that and still win games. And I think that's my concern. They look like they are becoming more one-dimensional, which is definitely a regression for Bayern.
I wonder as well if he's suffering from the fact that we were talking about it before slightly, weren't we, that this new generation of players who have been brought into Bayern but haven't necessarily always had the game time under Ancelotti and Heinkes for various reasons. You can sort of understand Heinkes sticking with exactly what he knew, because he knew he was only going to be there for 6-7 months. But it meant that the likes of Coman, Sanchez obviously was out on loan, they just simply haven't yeah, Gnabry was out on loan as well, haven't got the game time required to really take on the mantle of this next generation at Bayern, and therefore maybe defending Niko Kovac slightly. He's come into a situation where he's been tasked with this restart, with this next generation at Bayern, but these are players who simply haven't had the game time beforehand. It's all a bit sudden.
That's true, but one thing that we did see under Heinkes when he returned is one thing that I think we have all raved about Jupp Heynckes, is that everybody in a Heynckes squad knows his role. Right now, it's basically back to what Ancelotti was doing, is trying to just sub players in one for one and trying to make everybody happy rather than trying to get the right system in place.
Well, Heinkes did have the advantage that everyone knew their role in his squad because he had been there giving them those roles himself.
Well, I mean, I think if you win the treble as a manager, you carry a certain level of gravity.
That's much more difficult for someone like Kovac to come in and suddenly stamp his authority within just 4 or 5 weeks.
Qualified.
But I, like I said, just to defend him, I do think he's been let down slightly by the fact that this new generation with which he has been tasked to bring in simply haven't had any game time at all under the last two managers, who for separate reasons and understandable reasons have relied on Bayern's old guard.
And that's
now a lot of it is falling onto Niko Kovac's plate, and whether it's an over-reliance on aging wingers or the frustration at having to, he's playing Leon Goretzka and expecting him straight away to be Bayern's midfield general. It's not going to happen. Or expecting straight away that Serge Gnabry can be as dangerous down the flanks as Robin or Ribéry. It's not all going to happen straight away. And I wonder if he's just been let down a little bit by that.
And in that context, that's maybe where, I don't say he's underqualified because obviously he's qualified to be the head coach of Bayern Munich, but it's hard to be qualified for that group of players when Jupp Heynckes was the man before you, because he definitely can walk in with a certain you know, aura around him and everybody respects him in a different way. And that already puts him at a disadvantage. You know, there's this report from Bild that says James is supposed to have said after the Berlin defeat, you know, this isn't Frankfurt in the change rooms, you know, and that if that's the kind of thing he's already dealing with 5 games into the season, you got to ask yourself about this man management situation. I'm not saying whatever that Bild say is true, because it's highly possible that it's not, but it would make sense based on the way that they're playing that there's a certain, you know, disagreement between what Kovac is doing and the players.
Yeah, there's the issue with Hummels as well, and I think, yeah, like I said, we can't really confirm or know for 100% for sure whether this sort of dissent has taken place. Maybe it has, maybe not, but if it does turn out that it has, then there's I don't think there's actually any way back from that. Once that authority has been questioned,
yeah, then that goes, you're already lost.
I think that's pretty much endgame. Because so if that is the case, it's very concerning.
It's strange too, because there are so many players that Kevin Prince-Boateng is the prime example I'm thinking of, that say that the reason why he moved to Frankfurt was because of Niko Kovac. The reason why he left Frankfurt is because Niko Kovac left. Jerome Boateng also had he's a very likable person.
I think there's a strong difference between the Frankfurt dressing room and the Bayern Munich dressing room.
Of course.
But Kevin Prince-Boateng is also a different, very different character. He would not fit in the Bayern Munich dressing room for a number of reasons. And he's very outspoken. He talks about the uncomfortable issues. His stance on racism is very public, very vocal, very important.
And on pyrotechnics.
And, on everything, you know, and on coaching, on the importance of the game. And you can see the way that he approaches life, that he's always been that way. And I think that if you're a Bayern Munich player at the moment, you tend to be a little bit more reserved because there's eyes on you all the time. So it's a different media approach as a player because of the amount of expectation, the amount of eyes on you. So I think the atmosphere around Niko Kovac in Frankfurt will be completely different to the atmosphere around him in Bayern. But to pick up on what Matt was just saying, yeah, I think we do need to defend him somewhat. We can't just go after him all the time, because look at this team. This is a team that was almost willing to sell Jerome Boateng.
Right.
If they sell Jerome Boateng, you look at the defensive crisis that they would have been in right now based on injuries. You know, you've already got the problem that if David Alaba is out for a really long time, who's your left back coverage, because you've sold Juan Bernat. Now I know Juan Bernat isn't great, but he is a left back, unlike Leon Goretzka. So
or Kimmich or Rafinha.
And you've limited yourself to slightly narrow options. And you know, we've talked about, you know, maybe Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge waiting to find out whether Kovac is the right guy to give him 100 million. And that's all well and good. But if you're not going to do that, then you've still got to do something else. And Bayern have built this glitzy academy. But even before then, they haven't produced a player since David Alaba and Thomas Müller. That is a huge problem for a club this big. And the answer to that, I'm sure plenty of Bayern fans will say, yeah, but we've bought all the best young talent in the league. Yeah, okay, how's Sinan Kurt doing? Yeah, exactly.
Mitchell Weiser, how's he doing?
How's he doing? It doesn't always work out. And you can't just buy the best players and assume that they will fit from a tactical perspective or from a personal perspective, because the same thing we're just talking about with Kovac, how he is in Frankfurt is different from how he is in Munich. You buy a young player from Gladbach, from Hertha, from wherever, and you bring him to Munich, he's still going to have to fit personally as a human being in that environment, and that might not work. Whereas if you bring someone up through the ranks who's from that area, who understands maybe a little bit better, who's grows more familiar, who's grown up with this feeling of being in Munich Red and that whole side of town. You know, I'm thinking about your Schweinsteigers. I'm thinking about your Lahms. I'm thinking about those players that have come through that really understand, that then go away on loan and learn their trade a bit and then come back and are formidable players. Bayern haven't had one of those in a really, really long time. And their desperation to retain their identity in buying the best young players and forming some sort of a team has left them looking very, very short, because their squad is too thin. They don't have any academy products. And that has left Niko Kovac in a really difficult position, because he could be anybody. Any coach would be in a difficult situation here, because this is a very thin team that's expected to challenge on 3 fronts and doesn't have any youth academy products.
I think a lot of lip service has been paid in Munich over the past couple of months to the sort of image they want to show off themselves. And that includes the big fuss made around the academy. That was as if to say, everyone look at us, we're a forward-thinking, futuristic club. We've just put 70 million into a new academy. That's us thinking about the future. In hiring Niko Kovac, it's a young coach who is effectively German, speaks German like a German.
He's born in Berlin.
So that's, this is a you know, this is us sticking to our values as well. Appointing Hasan Salihamidzic an ex player in a sporting director role, that's showing us keeping it in house like we always have done it. This is us being Bayern Munich as we want to be. But I think actually a lot of it's just lip service. Like I said, we've not seen the youth products coming through. Okay, the academy will have to wait for a couple of years. But even so, John was pointing out that the lack of work that's been done in terms of youth anyway. Kovac, as we said, was a third or fourth choice anyway. And I think Salihamidzic is even there as a placeholder. I don't think he's able, or even if I don't know if he's expected to provide that link between players. Between players, coach, and boardroom that a sporting director is supposed to do, let alone whether he's actually capable of it. I'm not sure about that. I think, if anything, he was put in there more as a placeholding puppet that could be controlled from the boardroom until, as we were saying, in terms of the transfer budget, until Hoeneß and Rummenigge are confident that either Kovac is the man that they can give 100, 200 mil to start rebuilding this team, or not. And that leaves us back in the situation where we think Bayern are, in this strange twilighty transitional zone where none of them seem to want to commit to anything at the moment.
And I was talking to someone about this earlier. It's a great example of Salihamidzic maybe being out of his depth. You know, Jerome Boateng comes out and says he doesn't feel protected by the club. Mm. And Salihamidzic is asked about this and he says, no, we're protecting Jerome. So are you deaf? You can't just say the opposite of what a player is saying. That's not how it works, you know.
That's true.
And I think the other problem for Salihamidzic is that he's the successor to Matthias Sammer, who is probably best sporting director, or you know, whatever the position is that you can call. He is unbelievable.
As we'll come on to it, the comparison with the job that Sebastian Kehl is starting to do
Borussia Dortmund. If you have a figure like that in the dressing room. As a player, this is a Ballon d'Or winner. This guy is amazing. His tactical mind is unbelievable. He understands people. He understands the game. You only need to watch him on Eurosport on Friday night and you want to get a subscription for the season because of him. It's the greatest move that Eurosport have made in recent years. He's a phenomenal character. He's intense. He just wants to win all the time.
He wants to challenge people to push-up contests.
Exactly.
But you don't see any of that
Exactly. You see a guy who's willing to smile and shake hands and go to public events and do all the wonderful stuff. But in the changing room, I have to say, I really would love to know what a Mats Hummels thinks when he sees him. Because if there's not a respect there, then you've already lost a part of the triumvirate that's supposed to be the solid core of this team. And I think when you talk about youth players, when you talk about whatever it is, and I would say on the youth thing, I think they're actually doing good work there. I'm not sure that the board is willing to give them as much time as maybe as they should. You know, I think they're probably doing decent work there. And I think that Hermann Galland is a really experienced guy who's got a great eye for young players. But, you know, maybe there's a sense of, oh well, we're not gonna spend money on this we're not sure.
It might also change if they get back into the third division too.
And you know what? As Matt just said, 70 million new academy. Maybe in a few years we'll see something come through. But these are all issues that make it difficult for any coach. So as much as we can certainly say that Kovac hasn't done everything right, he's also not to blame for everything that's going wrong with Bayern at the moment.
To close off this Bayern section, Carlo Ancelotti, after drawing with Wolfsburg and Hertha Berlin and losing to Paris Saint-Germain, lost his job. Is Niko Kovac going to see out the season?
I don't think Bayern can afford to sack him and look red-faced. We've seen it with other big clubs. I don't want to say Manchester United, but if you look at the way that you follow a really successful coach, and obviously Jupp Heynckes wasn't there as long as Sir Alex Ferguson, but it's the same idea. You have this sort of philosophy, a coach that has really built something, and they were super successful under Heynckes. They won the treble. They won everything. They were at the peak of their game. And that came after losing the Champions League final at home. So to follow on from that, you know, Bayern have got to stick their neck out and make some decisions. They made the wrong one with Ancelotti. They made the safe move with Heynckes. And now they've pretty much got to ride the storm out with Kovac, whatever happens, I think. And yeah, maybe at the end of the season, you can take stock and see how you go. But I think to react any sooner would be a mistake, because other big clubs have done the same thing, and it just puts you in turmoil, as you know, as we see with the club that you support, Matt.
What do you think it would take, Matt, for Niko Kovac to be fired? I'm just asking, just because this is the first time since the 2010-11 season, where they, in the seventh week of the season, they are not in the top four.
The ultimate disaster will be not getting out of that Champions League group, but I think even there we'll probably look looking slightly into fantasy lands, to be honest. I think you'll make it to the end of the season, at which point I think it's probably been Bayern's plan all along to take stock at that point and decide yes or no, is this amount to continue with or not, and then who knows in the summer what options might be available for them on the market manager wise. Again, I don't want to just stick the knives into Niko Kovac straight away, because as we've discussed, I think there's so many issues around it. Too early to say yet, but this is certainly, yeah, this is certainly, if it wasn't a couple of weeks ago, it's a crisis now.
All right, let's move on to the more fun side of the Bundesliga and the more positives from the weekend. Well, and go.
Bayern losing isn't necessarily.
That we all quite enjoyed it.
No offense,
Jonathan, you called Borussia Dortmund's game against Augsburg the best game of the season so far.
I mean, it's a very early thing to say, and granted, you know, we've only had seven match days, but I really doubt that there will be a game later on in the season that has as many lead changes, unbelievable saves, shots against the bar, last-minute drama, returning heroes. There were so many narratives in this game. It could have been, you know, a Harry Potter book. Yeah. Yeah. It was unbelievable, and genuinely unbelievable. The word unbelievable gets thrown around in sport all the time. Like, oh, it was unbelievable. Oh, was it really? No. Yeah. This, on so many levels, was just such a phenomenal game, and there are so many things to talk about.
I've been told actually not to use the word unbelievable, just because if you can see it, then you have to believe it.
Yeah. Sure, but there were moments in this game that I was not sure I was seeing, you know, let alone the last 10 minutes. I mean, the game itself had so many ups and downs and so many different stories, but
I think it says it all that Kicker have gone for a headline on Monday morning describing Paco Alcacer as the unbelievable one.
Yeah,
yeah, so, true.
I think we're all on the same page with that. I think we can use it this time.
Okay. Well, so it's good that you brought up Paco Alcacer, because he scored a half an hour hat trick.
Off the bench. Started a game for Borussia Dortmund and yet has six goals. And no player has ever done that in 81 minutes, I think he's played.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy just what Lucien Favre has gotten out of bench players. I mean, Jadon Sancho coming off the bench and leading Europe's top five leagues in assists.
Lucien Favre is great at second halves. Let's just put it that way, because Borussia Dortmund's first halves this season have been
questionable at best.
Yeah, like 4 or 5 out of 10. Their second halves have been 11 out of 10. They've been phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I was on the way here, actually, I bumped into a Dortmund fan, a friend of mine I hadn't seen in a long time. He said, you know what? Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, I'm happy. But let's be honest, we could have lost a couple of those games. They have tread a very, very thin line. You know, Leverkusen, great. It helps that they suck. But, in you know, the way they collapse is completely unacceptable, is what I mean by that. When you play Nuremberg, it's a free pass, 7-0. It helps that when you play Augsburg, you have this phenomenal impact. You're at home, the crowd takes you, the goalkeeper makes a mistake, it's 4-3. All of these things have to come together. And there are a lot of things that maybe Borussia Dortmund fell on the other side of the line last season or the year before. Whereas this year, so far, everything's going their way. Every 50-50 is now a 60-40. Every corner is getting the right flick. Every shot is hitting the right bit of the bar to go away and not to a teammate.
Yeah. Yeah, lucky or fortunate is one of the words that I've seen in a lot of Dortmund coverage, especially around the Dortmund area.
In parts. That's not to take away from the performance, but you know, you have to have some element of luck to win 4-3 in a game like that.
Yeah. But let's get into a little bit of the nitty-gritty, Matt, because two of the goals that Dortmund conceded were on set pieces, and this is a defense that is incredibly young. Lukas Piszczek and Marcel Schmelzer did not play. Neither did Rafael Guerrero. It was the same defense, I believe, or pretty much the same defense that that Lucien Favre used against Monaco in the Champions League, outside of Piszczek being swapped in for Hakimi. Is Augsburg just a good set piece team, or is set pieces something that Dortmund needs to get better at?
The set piece thing is a slight hangover from the World Cup, actually, I think, where we've seen so-called underdogs relying on set pieces to get, you know, to get themselves ahead in games against supposedly superior teams. We talked about Dortmund defensively, I think, a few weeks ago, haven't we? The fact that I don't think he's been completely confident in Akanji and Diallo being together in in the sense of, and therefore moving Diallo out to left back and putting Zagadou in the middle, and it still remains an extremely young back four. If you add Hakimi to that, who's been so impressive going forward, getting involved with build up play,
really
great passing,
good.
Great crossing, he got a goal himself, but yeah, question marks being at the back, but he's only 19, so I'm sure that will come. But they're making up for it at the moment by just how incredibly dangerous they are going forward, and I think there's a huge contrast to be seen there with Bayern. Obviously, I think it comes from the training pitch. If you read the reports of how Dortmund are training under Favre, he's absolutely meticulous in the way he orders his team to repeat moves, and make sure that their ball control is spot on, that their passing is quick, that they're taking no more than two touches. And you saw that one of the best examples was it the second or third goal against Leverkusen, where the passing on the edge of the box.
Sancho to Royce, Sancho to...
That was impressive enough for on the counter-attack. The other one was involving Royce, Alcacer and Hakimi just on the right hand side of the box. The interchange of passing there was something that could only have come from having been drilled over and over again on the training pitch. That's a huge contrast to what we were talking about with Bayern Munich earlier, who seemed completely clueless in similar positions. They're certainly benefiting from that. And from this incredible understanding that's developing between Sancho and Alcacer when the two of them come off the bench. Worked out earlier today that between them, and neither of them have started a game yet in the Bundesliga. Oh, no, did Sancho start?
Sancho started
his first Bundesliga game at the weekend. Between them, they're averaging a goal contribution, so a goal or an assist every 31 minutes between them. It's absolutely obscene.
Yeah, they're really fun to watch, John. And I think you see that sometimes in American football, that it doesn't really matter how bad your defense may be. I mean, if you just outscore the opposition, it just doesn't matter. And Dortmund seemed to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a long-term strategy. I know that Lucien Favre said after the game, you know, the interviewer on Sky said, you know, wow, that has to be the game of the season. And he said, it was entertaining for you, for us, but we have a lot of work to do defensive.
He definitely knows that, and he'll be the first to admit, and even Pop. Put praise on Roman Bürki. We talked about on the opening day against Red Bull, he pulled off two outstanding saves, and he's done
key
it.
He saves
done
it, at key times in this game.
He's doing it frequently since. Kept them in it against Bruges and against Monaco in the Champions League at times as well. He's been impressive, and that comes from this defensive lapse, I think, at Dortmund. But I would, you know, given Favre's history, the way he worked at Gladbach, the way he set that Gladbach team up in the Bundesliga, I would back him to sort out the defence eventually at Dortmund, slightly more so than I would Kovac to sort out the attack at Bayern, if I can put it that way.
And I think the other thing that's interesting is obviously we were all ranting and raving about how great Dortmund looked under Bosch when he first arrived. I mean, this now, there's a temptation to say, well, isn't this just the same record with a different label? It's like, well, yes and no, because I think Matt makes that point, and it's an important one, that if anyone is going to sort anything out defensively, it's Favre, and his side doesn't look a tired team. Whereas when we watched the Dortmund-Schalke game, you know, Bosch's side seemed to lose stamina in the space of 10 minutes. They looked absolutely out on their feet.
In the same way Leverkusen do this season.
Yeah,
actually.
Absolutely. Whereas now, if anything, Favre's ability to ring the changes makes Dortmund look fitter in the second half. They look somehow empowered.
I think one contributing factor to that, though, is the fact that he seems not to have settled on a solid midfield partnership yet. I mean, he's constantly chopping and changing between Weigl, Witzel, Delaney,
Dahoud.
And Dahoud. I don't think he's sat in the same midfield, defensive midfield duo in two consecutive games. All four are good options. All four have impressed at various points. Julian Weigl even got on the score sheet the other week, didn't he, against Nuremberg? Was it against Nuremberg? Yeah.
Mind you, we could have gotten the score sheet.
Perhaps. I think perhaps once he settles on that, that will, on the one hand, add more defensive stability to the game, but on the other hand, might increase the effects of fatigue, which they're not suffering at the moment because of all the changes.
And I think the difference of Favre is, you know, he has a track record, whereas Bosch just had Ajax, and, you know, that's the team he was working with for a really long time. And Favre has made a lot of teams better. We've said it so many times on the pod, but you really see Borussia Dortmund are in a much better place.
Well, especially with Bosch, I mean, they had that game against Augsburg last season, one that they clearly should have lost. But maybe, I mean, it's the same opponent. But that game against Augsburg, they they were not as electric as this performance against Augsburg this past weekend. Yeah. And then you had the game afterwards against Tottenham Hotspur in the Champions League, where they were completely exposed in Wembley.
Yeah.
And then, but you see their performances outside of the one against Bruges, where they basically sat back for most of the game and relied on their very tall athletic striker, who I cannot remember the name of, to do things in going forward. Outside of that, that performance, I mean, they have looked also formidable in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing for Dortmund is that I think, as a fan, probably you're thinking, "Ah, oh, we're fun to watch again," you know. And I think it's been a long time since. I mean, even under Thomas Tuchel, yeah, they had their moments, absolutely. But this is the kind of football, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to say this, that sort of reminds you of the Jurgen Klopp era.
That is an opinion that I also read in the Dortmund coverage over the weekend, and that I also agree with.
And it's really, that must get, you know, we've talked about the Dortmund fan group, fan scene for a long time and quite often. It must get that group of fans who this club... There's quite a strong identity still with Klopp, and I think ever since his departure, this longing for a passionate manager who really identifies with the guy in the Zood, that's been missing. And it's been hard because you're never going to replace someone like Jurgen Klopp because he's such a unique character. But, you know, Lucien Favre isn't going to do that. He's a slightly awkward, hilarious Frenchman with a wonderful accent and very charming. But he does
Swiss-French.
Sorry, yeah, Swiss-French. Yeah. But you do get the feeling that he's getting them playing that football. And that is something. You know, you get the feeling that he understands the club and he understands the fans, but the way he has them playing football is the way that this club wants to play football.
I think the biggest contribution to this sort of revamp of Dortmund's identity comes not necessarily from Favre, as good as his football has been to watch so far, but from some of the moves behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And again, it's going to be more unfavourable comparisons with Bayern Munich. The fact they've brought in Matthias Sammer, who's, you know, an ex-player, legend at Borussia Dortmund, Sebastian Kehl as well, ex-captain. At the same time, you've seen quite a noticeable retreat from Hans-Joachim Watzke and Michael Zorc, especially in terms of what they say publicly. They've got to work behind the scenes, definitely. They've put a lot of work into doing their best to move away from that team who suffered so many psychological and footballing setbacks, whether the sporting issues under Tuchel and Bosch or the psychological issues with the Monaco bus attack. That team has pretty much all been moved on and phased out. So they're making the right moves in the boardroom, and I think that's going to stand Dortmund in really, really good stead, because they're already a team that have taken the right steps. I think we discussed this about a year ago, didn't we? So like, they have to start making a transition. We're seeing the effects of it. They have started taking concrete steps. I think that's really positive, and it's something that Bayern could look at.
They look like a more professional club, and they're really catering to understanding how a team works, the kind of people that you need, having someone like Sebastian Kehl who also, you know, demands authority and respect in that situation. Anyone who was in that squad that played with him knows the kind of guy he is. Very, you know, likable guy, also a young face. Now you've got a younger man talking to the media who, you know, has probably got good English as well. So you've and that's a really good point that Matt makes. You know, you take away players like people like Zorc and Watzke, who have a not necessarily deserved but a negative image in the press because of all the things that they've said and all of the difficulties that they've gone through in the last few years and the decisions that they've made and the players they've signed, and you take them out of the spotlight for a bit and you put this high-flying team in the headlines with Sebastian Kehl and Lucien Favre saying all the right things or saying things. Nobody's really interested about what Watzke and Zorc are saying, which means they can get on doing their job and the club is moving forward in the right direction.
Matt, Dortmund have 5 wins and 2 draws in the Bundesliga so far, unbeaten their first 7 games. How long can they keep this up?
I don't know who they've got coming. I've not got the fixture list.
Well, Stuttgart, who's obviously the bottom of the table. We'll get to them in a second. Yeah. But they play, I mean, in a couple of games, they're going to play Bayern Munich away from home. Or no, sorry, at home. They also play Wolfsburg and Hertha Berlin. Two teams that Wolfsburg, of course, started the season while it's fallen off. Hertha Berlin has proven themselves against
them. There's absolutely no one there that should be afraid. Obviously, the Bayern game will obviously be a huge sort of crossroads point where we can really start taking them seriously, because who knows, by that point there might be a chance to extend extend that lead over Bayern to however many points it would be then. Hertha Berlin will be an interesting one.
Yeah, that'll be a big test, I think.
Because I think we mentioned it briefly, but Paul Dardai seems to have struck upon a really, really impressive combination of not just the stability, which made Hertha one of the more solid but most boring teams in the league last year, but come out with a really impressive offensive flair around Andre Duda and Vidad Abisevic up there. So that'll be an interesting challenge for Dortmund.
It's also worth noting that they're playing Atletico Madrid twice in the Champions League too.
I think they might lose one of those games. But I'm with Matt. I'm really interested to see how they do against Hertha. Wolfsburg, they should win. Stuttgart, they should also win. And the Bayern game is a really interesting one, because I think that's really going to depend on where Bayern are at that stage. If Bayern are still languishing in this sort of indifferent form and who's blaming who and finger pointing, there's a really good chance that Dortmund blow Bayern out of the water in that game.
If the game was this weekend, if there was no international break and there was a game this weekend,
Dortmund would win if it was this
weekend. Well, who would be, not who will win, but who would be favoured?
Dortmund would absolutely
Without a doubt. But I think the biggest test is going to be how quickly can Favre get to work on sorting out this defence, because we saw in the first half against Leverkusen the problems that Leverkusen posed them. It could have been 3-0 had Kevin Folland's shot been just slightly to the right. We saw the issues that Benjamin Hendricks, another ex-Leverkusen, caused them for Monaco, especially in that first half. That does need sorting out, because there will come a point where they won't be able to rely on that. That could come against Atletico Madrid.
All right, a quick program, you know, before we continue. We're going to be doing an international break show, and we're going to be doing another edition of Bundesliga Spotlight focusing on Fortuna Düsseldorf and Nuremberg. So if you have any questions for those specific teams, let us know. Matt has recorded some great stuff with Fortuna Düsseldorf fans over the weekend that you'll be able to hear next week, so look forward to that. All right, so we've had our first coaching change in the Bundesliga this season. Typhoon Korkut is out at Stuttgart. And as of Tuesday, which is when we are recording this podcast, Markus Weinzierl has taken over the club. Of course, he played for the other Stuttgart team, Stuttgart Kickers, and has managed at Augsburg and Schalke before that. But let's get on to Typhoon Korkut first, because, Jonathan, I think you... you said it best, basically you broke it down the best on Twitter on how Typhoon Korkut is what he is, and he only has one way of playing.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem for Typhoon Korkut, because he obviously knows how to handle certain situations, but it seems those situations are time limited situations. He did an okay job at Leverkusen in the short term. He did enough to not get them relegated, exactly, which was okay in that situation. He did a perfect job for Stuttgart in a short-term situation at the end of last season. Hannes Wolf tried to get them to play flexible football. He tried to get them to be a variable side that could react to different situations.
I've never thought of Holger Badstuber as a flexible person.
That obviously didn't work because of demands of the team, or, you know, maybe the individuals weren't capable of doing that, or maybe Schalke weren't necessarily maybe Stuttgart weren't necessarily happy with that, because it meant that dropping some players and playing some players in different positions. But that's what Wolf was trying to do. It didn't work. He was fired, and you bring in Typhoon Korkut, and he gets them to play very one-dimensional, solid, stable but football, right? And no one was really expecting that from Stuttgart, which is why they kind of did so well. And if in the middle of the season you do that, it can sometimes be unpredictable, and it stabilizes a club, and that can give players a lot of confidence. And it's part of the reason they were able to nick games by close scorelines. But if you come into a new season and you don't change and you don't adapt and you play the same way, teams will ultimately find you out. And let's be honest, Stuttgart have been very unimpressive. I mean, Matt said it last time, you know, when we were on the pod while you were away, they should have lost to 10 men against Bremen. And that's a huge warning sign. Now, of course, Bremen are a very good side in good form, but Stuttgart had a man more, and they should never have been anywhere near winning that game. But they ended up winning it thanks to a slightly fortuitous turn of events and a good goal from Gonzalo Castro. So, and that was their first win of the season. And if you're looking at sort of a microcosm of problems, that's it right there. You know, you can't show your advantage at home against 10 men, then, you know, you've got big problems. And Typhoon Korkut never looked like a long-term appointment, and so it's proved.
Matt, Korkut had his... I tweeted that Korkut had his best stretch of his career at Stuttgart, and now it's already over. Now our friend and former colleague Ross Dunbar called that a hot take because he says that there's a lot of coaches that only have an immediate impact and then just fizzle out and have to do something else. Where do you think that Typhoon Korkut can go somewhere from here, or is he going to be a sorry to do an and/or question, but is he going to be basically the firefighter manager, as they're known in Germany?
I think that reputation was probably there already, even before he took on the Leverkusen job, and certainly when he came in to replace Hans Wolf in Stuttgart. And I would probably agree that, yeah, I think even statistically, it probably was the best stretch of his managerial career in the second half of the season last year. Stuttgart were the second best team in the country behind Bayern Munich. But as John was saying, there does seem to be a limitation and a predictability that sinks in around his team, which I think it got to the point where it was incompatible with Stuttgart, who are a club going places. They have got, I think, quite an interesting blend of experience in terms of like Mario Gomez, and they've brought in Gonzalo Castro from Dortmund as well, combined with the youth around players like Gonzalez up front and Pavard at the back. So there is good work being done there. Behind the scenes, the likes of Thomas Hitzlsperger are back involved with the club. Work with the youth. Michal Reschke is an impressive operator as a sporting director. So a lot of good work's being done there, and I think without it being a completely overwhelming appointment, Markus Weinziel, I think he probably does stand a slightly better chance of taking them on. However, when you go back to his last appointment in that 1 year with Christian Heidel in Gelsenkirchen with Schalke, they were so unpredictable, and they also began that season under Weinziel with 5 straight defeats, but he was able to turn them round, and it was such a difficult league season where they ended up being 10th, but combined with a really, really promising Europa League run where it had them dreaming of a repeat of the Eurofighters.
They should have beaten Ajax.
Yeah.
Nobody remembers that, but they really should have.
Yeah, well, let's go.
I think it's really unpredictable, but then again, that might suit Stuttgart somewhat, given the situation.
Well, let's go into Weinziel, because a lot of the press coverage around during his time at Schalke was the fact that he was much more of a passive manager rather than someone like Lucien Favre, who we talked about earlier, who was trying to control every detail. And there was a lot of that turned a lot of players off to him, and which is one of the reasons why I believe that he only lasted one season at Schalke. Is that personality going to work at a side like Stuttgart that is sitting at the bottom of the table?
It's tricky. I mean, I always think...
Now, I don't know if that's always been his personality.
No, but I think judging managers on how they do at Schalke is always difficult, because Schalke is such a difficult place to be successful, also because of the nature of the club and the environment around it and the fans. I mean, that's not a discredit to them, but their expectation is very high. It's not easy. You've got to remember that Schalke paid an awful lot of money for Markus Weinziel, you know, and
relatively for managers.
Manager, you know, and there was definitely a sense that Heidel believed in him and that they were going to be this dream team. I definitely bought that narrative because I was so impressed with what Markus Weinziel had done at Augsburg. Let's not forget that was the Augsburg side that went to play Liverpool in the Europa League, you know, and he got them there. I think it was Sascha Mulders was in that team, right?
Yep.
There's no way that
no,
should
he
have
was
played.
Actually, he was left out of the squad. He was still in the scene. He was still in that team that helped them get to the to.
And there's no way that they should have been playing as well as, you know, that as they were. And there's certainly something to be said about what Weinziel can do for the collective. Maybe that's what Stuttgart need, because Mats just talked about the individual pieces that they have at the club, and they do have some tidy players there. And maybe there just needs to be a greater sense of a collective worth at the club. Because if there's a coach that can do a lot with not very much, then Markus Weinziel seems to be one of those coaches. At Schalke, the expectation was to do more with more. And that's not an easy environment if you consider all of the other aspects, from, you know, expectation to the size of the club. So it's a completely different setting. He's had a long time away to digest and figure out what went wrong at Schalke. So I think that's probably worked in his favour. We're seeing that a lot of managers now who take a bit more time out of the game before taking the next job, waiting for the right moment, waiting for the right opening. There's no doubt that he will have had offers in the second division and in other countries. He's waited for this moment. I'm sure he's really well prepared. It's going to be interesting to see whether he has adapted. I'm actually convinced that he's not the type to have gone away and said, this is definitely the way I'm going to play and I'm going to stick to this. You know, if he comes to Stuttgart and plays the same way with the same mentality as sort of being a bit more passive, I'd be very, very surprised. I think in his time off, he's probably spent it wisely.
There'll be some people in the, around the Bundesliga, though, expecting him to translate some words into actions, though, I think. It was only a couple of weeks ago, if you remember, that he was quite outspoken regarding Schalke and Domenico Tedesco. And I think it was Naldo that came out in a post-match, in a I can't remember which game it was, in the mixed zone, saying, oh, I think it's... Yes, he referred without naming him to
maybe
Naldo.
He should just
be
quiet or something. Yeah, something like that.
Naldo knew we were talking about him and said, well, Marcus Weinzierl named him and said, you know, obviously, but he put a lot of the blame on his own time at Schalke and the relationship they had together. So, yeah, he's been quite outspoken, and that was only a couple of weeks ago. So it's time for him to maybe put his money where his mouth is.
How much has Stuttgart's chances to survive increased with this appointment?
Well, I think any new manager
massively.
There are much worse teams in the Bundesliga this season than Stuttgart.
That's why I asked, because I mean, it's not like anybody's really inspiring at the bottom right now.
No, but maybe that's more a case of Stuttgart being saved by other teams being bad rather than Stuttgart being too good to go down. I think that's been the case in the Bundesliga for a number of years, but I think Stuttgart should be fine. I think you'll inevitably have the new managerial swing. I think sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't always think that that's true, but I think in this case it will be, because you'll have a new manager and you will ask this squad, he will ask the squad to play in a different way and be a bit more flexible, I think. Whereas with Kukoc, I think they were very one-dimensional, and I think this team needs to break free of that because they do have the talent to be a little bit better. I mean, there's a strong midfield there. There's some young players that can do some damage if they're really let free, you know, left to roam. So I'm really excited, and I really hope for Marcus Weinzierl's sake that he is able to do a really good job with this, because I think anyone who, I mean, we all watched Augsburg when he was their head coach. I mean, anybody who remembers that time remembers how well he did and how fun Augsburg were to watch. And I hope that Schalke's, that 1 year at Schalke doesn't spoil him.
All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. And if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can find Matt Ford on Twitter at Matt_4D, Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2Gs and 2Sixes, and I'm at Davis_VanOpdorp. As previously mentioned, there will be a show during the international break next week with a spotlight segment on Fortuna Düsseldorf and Nuremberg, so be sure to look forward to that. So bye for now, and we'll be back soon.